God's name you need a solvent for except to kill someone.
That's an outrageous slur.
Google it, mate.
The only way that you can preserve peace is to prepare for war.
Views on News with Mark Latham. Mark Latham.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Good, thanks, Brent. Very well, in fact.
Bit cold, eh?
Well, I'm sitting in the sun down in the Southern Highlands, actually. It's a beautiful morning and just got a T-shirt on and it's quite good.
There you go.
Something's going on here. It's lovely. Maybe a first sign of spring in the air.
Oh, yeah. I thought I could smell it last night. I was out on the balcony having a whiskey out on the balcony just before I went to bed, and I thought I could smell, you know, the change of temperatures anyway. Mate, let's start and talk about this Office Works staff member who refused service to a Jewish man because she was pro-Palestinian. He was involved in this anti-Semitic incident just weeks before they were scheduled to visit the Melbourne Holocaust Museum as a disciplinary measure the next day. So they had been in trouble before, Mark.
And before that even, she told a customer that you couldn't get the paper needed for a certain type of photograph and reproduction because the Jews had used all the paper. Now, how could Officeworks keep an employee like that on their books? You can't be discriminating against people to the extent you say, oh, the Jews took all the paper, which is sort of a stereotype that's cost them many, many hundreds of thousands of lives through history, and then refuse someone service because he was wearing the little Jewish cap on his head, and she brought Palestine into it, which, Brent, is the problem where multiculturalism goes wrong. I mean, you've won the lottery of life if you gain entry to Australia as a migrant from the Middle East. Don't bring all those troubles and conflicts and hatreds and divisions to our country. That's the whole point, isn't it? You can leave it all behind because you've gained entry to our wonderful nation of Australia. So to get a job at Officeworks and bring those divisions and hatreds to the front counter to discriminate against Jewish people is just appalling.
Did you read the statement that Officeworks put out on Friday, or part of it?
No, but they weren't making excuses, were they? Because she should have been sacked the first time when she told people there's no paper left, the Jews took it all.
In a statement last Friday, Officeworks said the employee was profoundly impacted by her visit to the museum. The visit to the museum had a profound impact on the team member, resulting in their understanding and realisation of the gravity and impact of their actions. A spokeswoman said, the remorse was reflected in the disciplinary outcome for the team member concerned. So it seems as though the team member still has their job with Officeworks, Mark.
I know, and it's just a ridiculous statement. It's just a piece of fluff and nonsense to say she had to go to the Holocaust Museum to understand the impact of the Holocaust. Really? Really? I mean, every single person knows the murderous behaviour of Hitler and the Third Reich towards the Jewish people and the reason why Israel exists. That's the reason. That's the whole point about the whole Palestine argument, is because of the Holocaust. So she understood that thoroughly before any of these incidents and should have lost the job the first time around. In fact, she still got a job. And Officeworks thinks that someone needs to go away from their workplace, go visit a museum to understand what the Holocaust was and to feel remorse. Well, that's just a joke, isn't it? I mean, that's just farcical.
It is farcical. Beggars belief, as they say. So does this next story. For some, the International Olympic Committee has spoken out following one of the biggest controversies of the Paris Games so far, one that has sparked widespread debate around the globe. Earlier this week, a row erupted about the inclusion of two boxers. Now, these boxers had previously failed a gender eligibility test at a separate competition, Mark.
Yeah, I think it's a shame. The Olympics competition, the excellence of the athletes, the heroics of Australia's swimmers and other competitors is being overshadowed by politics. We saw that with the opening ceremony and the disgraceful misuse of the Last Supper. It's upset over 2 billion Christians around the planet. And to have gender politics, transgender politics, coming into boxing of all sports, I mean, it's a combat sport. A man can cause a lot of damage to a woman in the boxing ring, and we saw that in the fight with this Algerian caliph against the Italian lady, who after 46 seconds basically submitted. She said, I've got pain before, but not that strength of punch, and her nose was damaged and so forth. So after 46 seconds, she gave it away. But if your chromosomes are XY, biologically you're a man, and that should be the only test. If your chromosomes are XY, whether you identify with it or someone at birth said it was the genitalia were more female than male, or what your home Olympic committee says should be irrelevant. There should be one simple test in all these sports. If you're biologically male, you shouldn't be competing against women, particularly in a sport like boxing. Now, all the controversy and debate we have about domestic violence, what message does it send that it's okay for someone biologically male and clearly stronger and physically bigger than the Italian lady to be beating her up in the ring? So it just sends a terrible message. So I think Khalif, the Algerian, and Lin, the Taiwanese boxer, should never have been admitted. They both failed the gender test last year and the year before at the International Boxing Association, and that should have been where the matter ended.
We've done so well in week one of the Olympics. Swimming is just about over. Someone told me yesterday, I believe the swimming is going a little longer than normal and than what has happened in previous Olympics. But we've done so well in the swimming. So congratulations to all the Aussie champions that have done extremely well. And I see there was a story yesterday, Mark, that Rod McGeoch was suggesting possibly for the ability to be able to put more finances towards future Olympic bids and future Olympic athletes, maybe we should start looking at an Olympic lottery to raise money.
Yeah, that's been suggested before. I remember that was around at the time of the Sydney Olympics when we did really well. Look, obviously these athletes have been well funded. A lot of them go on to earn a lot of money. Another idea has been if they earn a lot of money from the investment at the Institute of Sport, government recovers that with a HECS type scheme of repayment. So there's different funding ideas, but you know, if it's not broke, don't try and fix it. So I think we've done really well. The swimmers in particular have been outstanding. Jess Fox on the rapids, the canoeing and the kayaking has been great. So if they're all successful under the current system and they inspire the next generation of Australian Olympians, as they have done, then you'd think we're in pretty good shape. So it's been fascinating. And I suppose my favourite story out of it is how this Cameron McAvoy, who has won the 50 metres men's swim and has revolutionised swim training. Instead of, I always wondered to some extent, if there's a sprinter in the pool, why would you be swimming 10 or 12 kilometres a day, like an endurance athlete? And this McAvoy, who had some disappointments in the 100 metres, adopted the tactics or the training methods of someone like Usain Bolt to have explosive pace, and he's only doing 7 kilometres a week in the pool, but doing weights and other things to strengthen his core and his muscle content. And he's come out and won the 50 metres with a revolution to the way in which swimmers are trained. Instead of getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and going up and down the pool for 2.5 hours, he's doing it entirely different. So it's not just funding, it's smart athletes like him who work out a better way of doing the training, and for the first time he's won gold.
And what a swim. I think it was 21.25 seconds for 50 metres, which is just, it's like, as I said yesterday when we talked about it, Mark, it's like he has flippers on. You know what I mean? He's just going so fast.
Well, I was up early watching it, and his body shape was totally different to the other swimmers. They all look like the traditional swim sprinters. It's more like bodybuilders, you know, with the wide shoulders and the trimmed up muscles and across the chest and so forth. He looked like he was someone who was fit, no fat on him, but was lean, no wide shoulders, and he looked like someone who'd sort of come out of an aerobics lesson or something. He'd done a lot of that, or a bit of jogging. He had a totally different body shape, and he was the winner, a product of this new way of training for swimming. And he points out that a lot of 15 and 16-year-olds drop out of swimming because it's just so onerous to be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, swim up and down for 2.5 hours. His training method's got a lot more variety, not as onerous on them, more targeted, and he reckons it'll keep more young people in swimming into the future. So it's a fantastic story.
It is a great story. Again, yesterday we talked about mum and dad's commitment of getting up, getting the kids to the pool 4 o'clock in the morning, taking them back after school in the afternoon. I know we have the commitment from the kids. You know, you take your hat off to them, but it's also the commitment from mum and dad. And a better way of training, don't get the kids out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's got to be a great idea.
It is, and I think one of the best part of the Olympics coverage has been the joy of the parents and recognition of their role. Like, Ariane Titmus grew up in Devonport in Tasmania. But that's a pretty hard place to be up at 4 o'clock in the morning in the cold doing swimming. And most of our swimmers logically train on the Gold Coast because of the weather there and the facilities. The family uprooted itself. All the family moved to the Gold Coast to support her swimming career as a youngster. So it's not just driving them in 4 o'clock in the morning to the pool. This is a family that relocated, and to see their happiness and joy and the success of their daughters, a wonderful thing. That parental love and dedication has been rewarded.
Absolutely. Okay, Anthony Albanese has put his climate and industry policies at the heart of a revamped Indigenous affairs agenda that Labor will take to the next election, apparently, declaring that the net zero transformation is the nation's best opportunity to deliver jobs and tackle disadvantage in remote communities, Mark.
Well, I think it's a cruel hoax on the disadvantaged Indigenous in remote areas. So the truth is, Brent, that Indigenous in the cities, where you've got jobs and facilities and opportunities and training, employment, are doing okay, you know, a lot better than those in areas where there's no jobs. I remember going to a place called Doomadgee when I was in the federal parliament. It was a part of a native title controversy. We got there up there in North Queensland, and I looked around and said, well, Bill Gates couldn't turn a dollar here. There's just nothing there that's a worthwhile part of the real economy to create real jobs. So you can't create things out of nothing in these remote areas, some of them desert type regions. So Albanese hoaxed the Indigenous with The Voice, saying it was the answer. It was never going to be the answer, and the Australian people didn't want it. And now this idea that renewable energy can give them jobs in remote, isolated places is another hoax. Because if you visit a completed wind or solar farm, there's nobody there. There's no jobs there. There are a few jobs in construction, but it takes just a handful of people to operate these facilities. So it's not an answer. I remember going to Bourke 2 years ago, where they opened an abattoir. Now, not glamorous work, but it's a job. And there's 100 available jobs at Bourke, high Indigenous unemployment, and they had to get the workers, guest workers from East Timor to come in. The locals wouldn't take the job. So part of the problem in remote areas is not, you know, the hoax of renewable energy jobs, and there's so few of those. It's whether or not people are in good shape to do the work. They've got drug and alcohol problems, welfare dependency, family breakdown, violence. I mean, a lot of those communities are completely chaotic, as we've seen in Alice Springs. So it's not about renewable energy. It's about a whole new approach. And quite frankly, if there's an Indigenous family that wants to move to the city and access the jobs and education and the better housing, the government should be helping them do that rather than trying to trick them into thinking that renewable energy is the answer to all their problems.
Yeah, very true. Although I see that the Prime Minister, of course it was Garma yesterday, I see the Prime Minister's move to reassure Indigenous leaders. He's still committed. And, you know, I suppose, on the left hand, this is good, but on the right hand, doesn't he listen to what Australians say in reference to the result, the resounding result of a no vote for The Voice? He said he was still committed to the Uluru Statement from the heart in full.
Well, didn't he listen to the Australian people?
Obviously
not. There's no point putting up a second referendum or giving people false hope. This is what Albanese does with the Indigenous. If you're serious about helping them, you have real tangible solutions based on the actual nature of their problems, not offering false hope. And quite frankly, if you put up a second referendum, people would simply say, I think in bigger numbers, didn't you hear us the first time? Didn't you hear us the first time? Well, we'll give it to you a second time, and it would be the same result, even worse. So, you know, I think it's sad for the Indigenous population. They have these false promises and false hope instead of a hard-nosed assessment of their problems and a realisation that, notwithstanding the land rights debate, most Aborigines in the city are a mile better off than those in these remote locations where there's not much hope in life.
Inflation figures out in the week just gone. A rate rise next week now appears unlikely. That, I suppose, is the key takeout from last week's inflation figures. While the headline consumer price index, the CPI, accelerated slightly to 3.8%, the Reserve Bank of Australia's preferred measure, they call it the trimmed mean, it slowed to 3.9% over the year to the end of June, which was a surprise to a lot of economists. And the bottom line, I suppose the takeaway is, Mark, now there was all this talk about, you know, RBA meeting on Tuesday and Wednesday, and the decision goes that they put rates up, that now looks as though it may be they're going to hold rates.
Well, it's probably a 50-50 call. The inflation rate was a little bit under expectations, but still not comfortable for the Reserve Bank, and a long way from their targeted 2 to 3% inflation zone. So it's probably still a 50-50 call. But I was interested during the week with the report by one of the ratings agencies saying that the problem with inflation in Australia is too much government deficit budgeting, which overstimulates the economy. Now, the economy is pretty flat, but it's also true that state deficits, particularly in New South Wales and Victoria, are adding to the inflation problem, and there's obviously big federal deficits on their way. So government should get their own budgets in order, and I think that's the best thing to take pressure off the RBA in terms of rate rises.
A survey this week, I know it's here a survey, there a survey, everywhere a survey, but these surveys continue to tell us the same message. Aussie voters are blaming the Albanese government's renewable energy strategy for raising power bills, potentially bringing more swinging seats into play at the next election. That's what new polling has found. What else did it find? 54% of all voters agreed with the statement that Labor's rush to increase the amount of wind and solar in the power grid was driving energy bills through the roof.
Well, I suppose people are just looking at the obvious, aren't they? That Australia used to have the cheapest and most secure energy supply in the world. We used our natural resources, coal and gas, to have an abundance of cheap electricity. Leaders decided we could save the planet in Australia from climate change and went down the path of renewables, and the bills have gone through the roof. I heard your quotes at the beginning of our interview, Brent, about the Chris Bowen saying prices and electricity bills haven't gone up. We should all send our bills to Chris Bowen's electorate office and ask him to have a look at them, because they've definitely gone up. It's part of the cost of living crisis. The major component of the cost of living crisis is the cost of keeping your house functioning with power, electricity and gas. So these are obvious things, and the federal government must be in a state of denial. Chris Bowen must have no idea what your ordinary Australian household is going through. So it makes sense, doesn't it, that the renewables are causing the problem, and then as taxpayers we pay a lot more for the subsidies to renewable energy companies and the new transmission wires that are needed to hook them into the grid. So we're losing on both fronts.
Let's talk the US presidential elections before I let you go. Can I ask, I made the comment yesterday, and I suppose I picked this up from a couple of articles that I read during the week. Do you think that the Trump campaign honestly thought that Biden wouldn't step aside and that they'd be going to the November 5 election with the Joe Biden being the representative for the Democrats, and so therefore they did not have a plan B in place for Joe Biden to step aside?
Yeah, they probably couldn't have known. Joe Biden didn't know, did he?
Or if he did, he forgot.
Well, he forgot, and his staff had to remind him that he was out of the race. So probably they would have had some tentative plan B in mind for a Kamala Harris. I think Trump, in some interview on a golf course, said, oh, yeah, we'll end up with Kamala. But Trump himself is an interesting politician. He's sort of like fixed artillery. Once he gets his sights on you and he starts to bombard a politician, as he did Hillary Clinton and then Biden, to get him out of the race, well, he will destroy you politically. But his fixed artillery means it takes him a while to get his sights on the new candidate. And he's probably having that trouble with Harris, to work out her weaknesses and how he can hone in on them. He's very relentless when he bombards you with his rhetoric and insults and attacks and so forth. But, yeah, it'll take him a while to get hold of her. So the race is tightened. She's getting a honeymoon, as you'd expect, in the mainstream media in the United States. They've got the Democrat convention later this month. But the election itself is still, 3 months away, which means a lot of surprises in American politics. So Trump probably had a tentative plan B, but he needs to firm that up and do a bit better than he has the last couple of weeks.
Well, he's been severely criticised over his remarks at the event attended by black journalists this week, where he repeatedly clashed with the female moderators. I'm sure you've heard the audio, you've seen the vision, and questioned his opponent whether that was the right thing to do. I'm not too sure. The jury is probably still out on that, but a lot of people think that he handled it the wrong way.
Well, they say that, but there is a backstory where Kamala Harris, of West Indian and Indian heritage, has sort of used different parts of her background depending on the audience. She's been a bit of a chameleon. If she goes to a certain audience, she'll tell them a certain part of her story. And her supporters have said, because she's the candidate, African-American women should support her. Well, she's not an African-American woman. So I can see where Trump's coming from. Harris has had a history of gilding the lily about her own ethnic origins, but yeah, it's probably not the best look. And would people vote on that sort of thing, or would they vote on cost of living and jobs and economic prosperity? That Trump sometimes gets off message from my point of view. I like what he's got to say about the economy and supporting business and jobs. And as a businessman, he was very successful himself. That's his strength, and he should stick to that instead of getting into, you know, deeply personalised politics where he seems like he just can't resist it.
All right, mate, thank you for your time on this lovely Sunday morning. Enjoy your time in the Southern Highlands, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Yeah, fresh air, taste of spring, it's beautiful.
Thanks, good on you, Mark. Thanks, mate. Bye-bye. That's Mark Latham this morning.